We're only 10 reels away from the 100th show. Who knew? In this reel, the boys head back in time to check out Tina Turner and Mel Gibson in the 1980s classic Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. In theaters, they check out the return of Celine in Underworld Awakening. Should they have just let her stay asleep? In trailer news, they check out Paranorman, an animated comedic thriller from the creators of Coraline. It's a slow news week, so we'll just get right to the point. Two men enter, one man leave.
The past.
You telling me you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
The present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
The future.
Hi. Welcome to the future.
And I'm telling you, it's great here.
You're listening to COL Movies.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a brand spanking new reel of COL Movies. My name is Jeff, and I would like to introduce my blank co-hosts. I forgot to know what the average was. Ray and Steve, how are you guys doing today?
I don't know how accurate that adjective is today. I am feeling rather blank.
Oh, true. True that.
And with that, let's go on to the news.
News on the march.
Yeah, we got nothing this week. Sorry.
We got nothing for you. Sorry about that.
Yeah, nothing interesting. I mean, Slashfilm had like some post about the exactly why did Bill Murray keep repeating his Groundhog's Day? Because today is February 2nd when we're recording this. So, but yeah, that's not interesting enough. So moving on into the past.
You're telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, yeah.
81% fresh, 50% audience. Directed by George Miller and George Ogilvy. Okay. Okay. I think I've heard that name. I just never actually seen it typed out. I don't know. Mm. Starring Mel Gibson, Tina Turner, and Bruce Spence. And first time watcher here.
Okay.
This is the first time I ever watched this film. Yeah. I don't know if it was the movie or me, but I had a hard time paying attention to this movie.
Well, I'm curious, what about the franchise as a whole?
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
Okay. Well, that's the tough part. I mean, it is kind of a standalone movie compared to the like Mad Max 2. You know, you could watch this and kind of get it.
Well, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that because there were points in this movie like, okay, so Bruce Spence is in this. He was also in the second one. Although the second one he played... Well, here's the thing. I always assumed that he was playing the same person.
Yeah, he does.
That it was the same guy, but apparently he's not. But they're like the same kind of guy. I was like this, and I don't know. Maybe it just I never really paid that much attention to that fact back
or
in
'85.
I was like, what? Wait a second. Because, you know, at the end, they sort of run into each other, and he's, like, acting like he never met him before. And I'm like, he was a big part of the second movie. So that was kind of confusing. And then that sort of, well, I'm going to be honest. This is a movie I loved. My first exposure to Mad Max was the second one. Like, that was the first Mad Max movie I saw. Mm-hmm. And I loved that movie. And which then I don't know how I got a hold of the first one, because this was back in the days when like not everything was on VHS or easily available.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But somehow I managed to see Mad Max, which if you watch Mad Max and The Road Warrior, they're really sort of a completely different tone than this film. This film is very sort of almost like, I would dare say this seems almost like a kid's movie compared to the other two. The other two are very dark and gritty and sort of, well, especially The Road Warrior is very 80s. Very, very 80s in its sensibilities in terms of there's lots of boobs in it. But this one was kind of strange to me now that I'm watching it again for the first time in, I don't know, a good many years. Mm-hmm. I don't know particularly that it's held up for me.
And that's kind of one of the reasons I wanted us to watch it. Yeah. You've kind of hit on a couple of things. It's like, we know that Road Warrior, you know, or at least Mad Max franchise is coming back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, starring the lovely Tom Hardy. But I wanted to, this was my favorite of the three films.
Mm-hmm.
as a kid.
Okay.
And I hadn't, I mean, I've watched it many times, but I hadn't sat down and watched it in a while. So it was definitely like, okay, what are my sensibilities thinking about it now?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a very big personal connection to this movie, which okay. I'll explain in a little bit. I wasn't in it or anything. Don't worry about it. I wasn't anything like that. Yeah. But such a funny story. So this was a big part of my life, especially the song and the soundtrack. The okay. song, we don't need another hero.
Uh-huh.
When I was in like high school-ish,
mm-hmm.
was like a huge song, an oh, epic, yeah. you know, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it was, at the height of Tina, you know, like it was like at that time when she was doing Private Dancer and, you know, it was all that stuff too. So this was like Tina fever.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like her being in this movie was like the drive for a lot of people going to see it. You know, could Tina Turner act? Could she do all this kind of stuff? And I just remember just being in love with this movie, from the music to, you know, the fact I even still remember the trivia that chainmail outfit she wore weighed about 75 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the hardest move that she did was when she jumped into the Thunderdome.
Mm-hmm.
Through the thing with that extra like 80 pounds on her, you know, and stuff like that, you know, and different stuff. And I always was fascinated by the Thunderdome.
Right.
And if you think about it, like Thunderdome itself has become like a major pop culture thing. Like two men enter, one man leave.
Yeah. I kind of forgot people that's where that. This came from.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people say that all the time, you know, certain things about it. And so this one seemed to become more of a pop culture phenomena
mm-hmm.
than the other ones did in some ways. While when you think of Mad Max, you think of the first movie, I think,
mm-hmm.
more than likely. And you think of the vehicles. When you think of Mad Max, you think of the vehicles. You think of, I don't know, the search for gas and the search for water and all that kind of mess in the post-apocalyptic. But then a lot of the things you can remember from like just words and trivia and stuff like that come from like the third movie, which is odd.
Right. Well, yeah. It's another thing that, you know, my older, much more critical mind is sort of latching onto is that, okay, in the span of the trilogy, you know, these three movies, the whole nuclear war thing actually didn't happen. It happened sometime between the first and second movie.
Right.
The first movie was before nuclear war. Was it like the, you know, society was falling apart and it was supposed to right. be in the future and everything was pretty bleak, and but there had not yet been a nuclear war. Nuclear war happened basically off screen. When right. you see the Road Warrior, they talk about how these two warrior tribes went to war and screwed everything up. And I guess I was looking into a lot of it, and this movie takes place like 15 years after the second movie, about.
Okay. I never knew the span, so that's interesting.
Well, the timing really doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because it almost, you know, when you're watching this movie, especially not knowing anything about the other two, they make it seem like there's been a whole lot more time has gone on, you know, enough for all these people to sort of like
be mutated
and forget about, you know, stuff that happened 15 years earlier. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Previous society.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when you talk the whole scene with the kids and them talking about, well, first of all, they're language has almost completely changed.
Yeah.
You know, they speak in weird ways, and I'm not talking about Australian accents.
Mm. Right.
But just the fact that it's like, you know, they don't even know, you know, anything about previous society. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of older people around.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Because they more than likely died off.
Or something. They don't really do a whole lot of explaining. So you just kind of have to take these things on faith for the most part. You know, so that was just one thing. So I think my brain, you know, I'm being a lot more critical about the movie just simply because I wasn't thinking about a lot of these things. But I will totally agree. When this movie came on, I just remember it being a huge deal, especially the whole Tina Turner thing being a huge deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, the music was a huge deal. And, you know, of course, it being more than 20 years later, I'm watching it now, and I'm like, the music doesn't really fit this movie very well. It's sort of a big hodgepodge of stuff, you know. So much for it's funny because I was watching it, you know, on my home theater system, and I went upstairs for something, and my nephew was like, what are you watching? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, there's like all this weird music going on downstairs. And I'm just like, you know, because you've got the Tina Turner music, and then you've got the saxophone part, and, you know, then just the standard movie music. So he's like, I don't know.
Then what you've the got hell you're the, they're like, ding, dong, ding, funky, like, thing where they're, you know, they're walking through Barter Town, and then you've got the kind of almost like the Star Wars cantina sounding music at certain times, and you've got it's just a bunch of funky weirdness for sure. You know, but all in all, like, I think what, you know, there were unique characters in this movie, and they weren't just on the, you know, they weren't just meant to be killed on the cars. You know what I mean? Like, you actually got to know them. Like, Master Blaster, he's crazy. You know what I mean? And, you know, when the, you know, but I guess it was just an interesting view. And I know that as a kid, I really liked it. And the story behind it for me is the funny part is, where I really got into this movie was we had to do a lip sync for drama class. You're laughing. Yeah, shut up. Steve's first time in drag was in sophomore year of college or high school doing We Don't Need Another Hero.
Nice.
Yes. And I did it, like, it had to be epic. I'd never done it before. So, of course, I had to have the lights come up when I was wearing, like, a big cowl and had a big stick in my hand. Uh-huh. And then, you know, when it blasts into the one thing, I had to pop off the cowl and everything and was, like, in Tina Turner outfit.
Sweet.
So I had to, with the hair and everything, had to do it.
Is there any video of this going somewhere?
No, but my mom has a picture of me in it.
Oh, we need that picture.
Hilarious. And then after I did it, the top like five got to perform at an assembly at school. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I did the best. So my teacher like gave us like full wardrobe access, and she was like, you need to wear this and this and this. Yes. The bitch put me in heels and a tube top. Yes. Yes, exactly. So I was much smaller then.
Did you have those kicking earrings on?
I had big earrings on. Tina Turner wig, big hoop earrings, a black tube top, a jean skirt, and high heels.
Oh, wow.
Doing a Tina Turner song as a sophomore in high school. Scared out of my frickin' mind. But had to do the full-on, like, you know, all the children say we don't, you know, lights go up. We don't need another hero. Drama, drama, drama.
Nice. Yeah.
Ugh. So I've always had a connection to this movie. It's in a strange way. Yes, yes. And my other little favorite little thing about this is when you watch, you know, California Love, the video, and you see them in the Thunderdome, you know, and I'm like, I've always thought that that was cool. But, you know, but all in all, I mean, yeah, you're right. There's tons of major holes in this movie, but I've always thought of it as sort of just a let go and let God kind of movie. You know, it's like, you know, if you just kind of let it go and have a good time with it, just it's fun. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that it necessarily fits the full-on Mad Max mythology 100%, but it is funny how this movie has kind of hit pop culture a lot more than the others did.
But. Yeah, it's definitely a much more accessible film than the other ones.
Yeah, that's a good word for it, accessible.
one of the things that all right, because like I have this thing, like if I'm watching a movie, and especially a past movie, and I'm like not down with it for whatever reason, a lot of times I will jump over to Roger Ebert's website just to sort of look at his review and see if maybe we were on the same page or not. And when I looked at Roger Ebert's review for this movie, I totally didn't get what I expected.
Really?
We will just say that Roger Ebert loves this movie. Loves this movie. Like, gave it 4 stars. Yeah. Said it was the best out of all of the movies. You know, rarely is a sequel better than the original that it was based on, and it's just a wonderful vision, a fully realized story. I mean, he's just like, I'm like, did somebody pay him to write that? I'm like, wow.
This was Roger Ebert in 1985, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So then the question comes to, what would he think about it now?
I don't know. I don't know if I don't think he's ever really gone back and changed any of his.
Well, I don't expect it necessarily to change anything. But what I would be interested in is for him to start doing some retrospectives. Like, he looks back at movies that he reviewed before and comes up with what he thinks of it now, which is one of the reasons why I like having this segment of our show, is because, sure, we're looking at movies that are coming out now. Great, but what will happen in 10 years when we see Haywire? Are we going to say, actually, that was an pretty good film? Sure, there was some robotic acting, but the sound design and all this was all great. Or are we going to say, yeah, it was still kind of lame?
Well, for me, it's hard for a movie. Like, if I hated a movie when I was younger, unless it was because I didn't understand something about it, it's really hard for me, for like my opinion to get better. It's much easier for my opinion to go the other way.
Yeah, well, I that was a bad example, I'm sure, but
right.
That I gave. Maybe that it is something like where we see something that was absolutely awful, and then we come back, War Horse, maybe. And our no, that's it. Somebody else's didn't really like that. Skyline. We take a look at Skyline in 10 years. What are we going to say? You know?
Ugh. Right.
It's still bad.
Yeah, right.
Okay, bad example again. I don't know.
Like, boo.
Yeah.
No, but I'm with you. Like, I think this was a movie that met the need at the time when it was out, probably, whatever need that was. I think it was a vehicle for, I mean, it was a time when, good God, what the fuck is his name? When Tina was huge and hot, you know, and it was also a time when Mel Gibson, you know, pre-meltdown,
right.
You know, so this was, I mean, it was kind of a big time for them. And so it came out, it was the one of the movies that was PG, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When the rest were R. So it was the one that was most accessible, using that word. I love that word. Mm-hmm. That was a good choice of word. thank you. So it made it accessible. It made it kid friendly, you know, but more family friendly, maybe
teen friendly
than previous. Yeah, teen friendly. So, you know, at least at the very least, You know, it brought Mad Max into the broader culture of America. So it's one that, you know, that's why I think, I mean, that's how I probably saw it, because it definitely was something younger. I don't even remember how I saw it.
Right. Well, it was like, I think it was one of those movies, especially for Mel Gibson. It was sort of like right before he completely exploded, because this was like a couple years before Lethal Weapon, which to me is right. When when he was just like, you know, he hit and it was everywhere once Lethal Weapon was a big hit. You know what I mean?
Right.
So this was just right before then. You know, he was an unknown. Mad Max was like his first movie right. that he was known for in the States. And so, you know, it's right at that cusp of time there before. So it's just interesting to look back at it and just kind of be like, you know, but that's kind of why we do the show, right? So
exactly. So that's the fun.
Yeah. So that is Mad Max Beyond Thunder. No, what have we learned from this movie? We've learned surviving nuclear war gives the nobodies a chance to be a somebody. Death is listening and apparently taking the first one that screams. Spider monkeys are excellent tractors. Tractors? Trackers?
True.
Oh, God.
When you type faster, I am having a hard time reading the next line. Bust the deal, face the wheel. Two men enter, one man leave. Oh, I seem like some sort of... Anyways. We don't need another hero. We don't need to know the way home. All we want is life beyond the Thunderdome. And that is what we've learned from Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. First time viewer, I need to see it again. We kind of mixed bag on this movie. I kind of liked it, but my attention wasn't fully there. I think it might be worth a look-see at least once.
Yeah, for me, this movie is an example of a film that when you saw it when you were young, it seemed a whole lot better than it actually was. That's what I say about this one.
I don't disagree with you. I think it's always been one of my favorites, but it definitely seemed a whole lot more epic when I was younger. I lived for this movie, and Tina's the best. But I do agree with you, Jeff. Like, if you watch it again, I think you pick up on some of the nuances, and I think it gets funnier as I got older. Too, you know, just like you hear some of the little jokes that they make. Like one of my favorite is the brothel is full. Did you catch that one?
Yeah,
That's one of the most hilarious. He's like, I have skills. He's like, the brothel's full. You know, you just don't catch it. But I'm glad that critics liked it, so maybe that keeps it alive.
Oh, I didn't think it was that bad of a movie. In any case. And we also found out how gay you really are, Steve. Just saying.
Moving I knew on. Sharing this with the world would be a bad thing.
Into the present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
Underworld Awakening. Rotten Tomatoes rating 28% rotten. Yes. 74% audience. Directed by Mens Merland Bjornstein and starring Kate Beckinsale, Michael Ealy, and India Isley. Mm-hmm. So, another Underworld movie. Celine is back. And she is frozen. And somebody breaks her out. Michael! Maybe. So, Underworld Awakening.
Yeah.
I'd say one thing was that I saw this at a Regal cinema, and it was a theater that I'd never been to before, and it was one of the loudest movies I'd ever seen. Like, I sat through a lot of the movie with my fingers in my ears. That's how loud it was.
Maybe it was they had their volume.
They had it cranked. I was just like,
were there only like two people in the theater? So the
no, there was a lot. There was a lot of people in the theater. In fact, I saw it with five other people.
Oh, you know? Okay.
So it was just like, wow. Like I was like, it was one of those things where I was trying to debate, like, do I get up and go complain and tell them to turn it the fuck down? It was like, wow, this is really loud, like really loud. So yeah, anytime like the gun fights or whatever was going on, I'm like, my fingers are in my ears because I was like, holy crap,
that would hurt.
Yeah. So well, that might have tempered my view a little bit, but
I wound up seeing it in at the drive-in.
Yeah.
So, Half Price Wednesday, yay! Saw it for $3.50.
Sweet.
I saw it at an Alamo, so I probably had the best experience. Nice volume, great theater, good pizza.
Did y'all see 3D?
No. Yes, I did see 3D. Okay. Although I will have to say, what 3D?
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah,
I didn't see a whole lot of, even in 2D, I didn't even see where there was a lot of option for 3D other than stuff jumping, because it was such a dark film, like visually dark.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, so I was like, how, I don't know how the 3D is really popping off of this darkness.
Yeah.
Well, plus
there didn't seem to be by their nature too.
Well, by their nature too, because you're watching, you're watching the movie through polarized glasses, you were actually losing brightness watching it with 3D glasses on. Mm-hmm. So it makes an even darker movie darker. So
the brightness, I didn't have any real complaints for. Sure, I understand that it's probably looked a little darker than if I was watching in 2D. Either that or the projectionist at my theater did a really good job and actually had it up a little bit brighter so that everything would be muted a little bit, went through the glasses and compensating for that. Usually with good 3D, if you're going to get anything, and I'm not looking for those tricks of like she's throwing one of her shuriken exploding devices thingies through the air and it's coming out at me or anything like that. I usually get a little bit more depth. Like I feel like I'm looking through a window into actual live action, which is what I like for 3D. And which, you know, Avatar did a really good job on. Toy Story did an amazing, freaking amazing job on Megamind, which I don't think we give enough props for. I mean, any of those computer generated 3D movies, do a really good job of. That's where I think that people, when they're looking for 3D, need to focus on when they're doing that.
Makes
they
sense.
Didn't even think about trying to get some of those tricks through in this movie. So they had no thought for 3D. I don't know if this was supposedly post-converted or was this shot 3D?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I haven't really seen that. I guess it's probably on Wikipedia somewhere. Mm-hmm. But one thing I definitely know is about the only place that I saw where 3D was like even probably visual was when he had that like whip thing, and I saw him like whip it toward the screen and then away from the screen, back at the screen. I was like, okay, there's a 3D element. You know, they're trying to.
I forgot about that one.
But other than that, I, you know, you know, but I mean, I guess to my point is, what did you guys ultimately think about it in comparison to the others? Because have y'all seen the others? I have.
Well, I've only seen the first one, you know, and that was a while ago, but I didn't feel like I needed to know anything from the other movies.
Yeah, it does kind of start over. This one kind of starts it over. Yeah.
I mean, they tell you pretty much everything you need to know in the beginning.
Previously on Underworld.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Previously on Underworld. I like that.
Although I kept wanting to call this, everyone is laughing. I kept wanting to call them like, this is like Resident Evil Underworld. Like, Only because of the look of the film, and like the fact that they were like in a facility, like a place that was like, you know, some sort of crazy lab that was experimenting on them. So it had a lot of similarities to, you know,
yeah, where she wakes up. Yeah, exactly.
So I was cracking up about that. And, you know, the people that I saw the movie with were all fans of the other movies. I mean, they didn't hate the movie. I guess they were just kind of, they were okay with it. A lot of times we were just kind of picking things apart. Like, and it's one of the things I noticed was like, she only seemed to be able to use her like vampire powers at certain points. Like, you know, when she was escaping or trying to, I think she was escaping, and she like runs past all the guards and she does it like super, super fast and like cuts all their throats, which is part of the trailer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But then she's like has to chase somebody or somebody's getting away from her, but then she's just running normal speed. It's like, can't you do like the vampire like run fast thing and catch the dude? Why can't you, you know? So there was like this really weird sort of, oh, now we're using her powers. Oh, now she's just being normal. It's like we kept scratching our heads and like, why wouldn't she do it this way?
Why can't she use them all the time? Yeah,
right.
Because she wasn't feeding, maybe. They kind of made a big deal about the feeding issue in this movie compared to others. They weren't healing enough. Like, they didn't heal it quick enough because they didn't feed or certain things like that. So maybe that was part of it. I don't know. But I did get a clarification. They did shoot in 3D.
Okay.
It was one of the first movies to be shot using Red Epic digital cameras in 3D.
Okay. We were sort of cracking up at some things like, you know, if I ever have my own lair where I'm hiding out, I'm for sure going to make sure that I put all my guns up on the giant gothic looking chandelier with milk candle wax.
Right.
So there were little elements that we just kept cracking up about. We're like, oh, wow. Okay. But like I said, I don't think anybody really didn't like it. I mean,
it was a ride. It was a fun ride.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, what did you guys think? I mean, I don't know if you have much of a comparison, Fuzz, but one thing I noticed that was very different was Celine had a very different nature in this movie. She was more of a protector and a kinder, gentler kind of vampire hunter kind of, you know, person. Uh-huh. And I don't mean hunting vampires, but I mean vampire hunter, Death Dealer. Yeah. In this movie, because of the mothering, I guess, that she suddenly becomes a mom or whatever. But I was like, I don't know if I like her being that emotional. I didn't think she was able to be that emotional.
I don't really have much to compare to, so I'll have to defer to you guys on this.
What did you think about that, Jeff? Did you catch it at all, or have an opinion?
The change of Celine. I think it's probably because I haven't seen the other movies in a while.
Okay.
That I mean, I just took the character as she was, so I couldn't really say it if I didn't really notice any like specific change with her. Okay. But I mean, if you're saying that, you know, she seems to have more heart. I mean,
yeah.
She fell for Michael Corbin. Come on.
That's true.
She's got a heart. She fell in love, of course. And then she's got a daughter. She's got a daughter. She's gonna be like, oh, my daughter. I need to take care of her, and have that whole motherly feeling. So yeah, I can see it. So,
that's true.
It makes sense to me.
Fair enough. And then speaking of Michael, I got annoyed. I'm like, I'm over Michael. Like, first of all, the first scene in the movie, that wasn't even the same actor. I think that they just CGI'd his head on something else. And then, you know, the whole thing, I mean, I'm like, oh my God, let Michael go. I'm like, you've got to get down. I'm so tired of Michael. The whole movie was like, Michael, 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 Michael. You know, and I'm like, ugh. Over it.
Well, Was it? I mean, I'm assuming it's because, you know, he was such a central part of the first movie,
right?
That's why they're making such a big deal about, you know, him.
They had a good way of putting him to the side. You know, just kind of, you know, show something at the beginning of the film, and then you never see him again, and we don't know what happens. So that's like an additional mystery to put into the plot, which they don't do very well in executing these mysteries, by the way.
Yeah, they did.
I did really like the fact that Celine was subject one and then subject two, and you're like, oh, wow. So Corvin must have gotten away, or he died or something, because he's not there, because, you know, one, then two. So where is he? He can have been subject three, because subject two was Eve. So if Michael was there, he would have been subject two, and then Eve would be subject three, right? That makes total sense. Then we find out there was subject zero at the very end.
Right. And
like, there he is. And then they... So through the entire film, he's just frozen. I didn't see here that Scott Speedman, who appeared as Michael Corvin in the first two films, announced that he would not be reprising his role for the fourth installment. Did appear in the form of archived footage from the first and second film, whilst a stand-in portrayed his character from a distance and later in an unconscious state. So, yes. So there's kind of confirmation that, yes, he wasn't there, and what they did to do it. So,
good point.
Yeah, so he was hanging upside down, frozen. Why did they have him upside down anyways? I don't get that part.
I just assumed it was supposed to be some weird reference to them being vampires.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Hanging upside down. Yeah.
I kind of had that same feeling when I first realized it.
I think we were just supposed to accept the fact that they were hanging upside down. There was not supposed to be much of an explanation for it. Kept the blood moving the right direction? I don't know.
But they were frozen. They were.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what did you think about the kid? You know what? I will admit, I didn't see that coming.
They did a pretty good job of be like, oh, she's following Michael. She's following Michael. You know, she's believing that she's trying to find Michael as well. And then we find out it's this girl. I kind of wish the kid did more.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
That she was more badass. That she would... I wanted her to freak me the fuck out. And be like, oh my God, how powerful is she? Because, I mean, just in the... I mean, the first time she does anything, she morphs out and then rips apart that lichen. And it's like, okay, so then back in the coven, when she's being attacked by a lichen, why didn't she just kick ass and, like, you know,
tear her teeth, jumped on his back,
drink some blood, and then just tear him apart? And then when Celine comes to save her, she's standing there like, he attacked me, as like a sweet innocent little kid. And I just wanted her to freak me out because she's so powerful and she's just so oblivion. It's like she's a little child still, although she seemed to be like 12 or 13 or something. She wasn't like that. It would have been awesome if this kid was like 5 or 6 or even 8. A really, really young kid that this horrific things would have been
Even like the visuals I remember getting from Let Me In.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, Well, I mean, there were some holes, and that's where the holes for me kind of got annoying, because, I mean, I kind of let go, but at the same time I thought about it, which was, I didn't know at first if she was like a clone.
Right.
Where they had taken DNA from Celine and taken DNA from Michael and try to clone something, or if they had taken Celine's and then took some lichen DNA. I don't know.
Okay, because that's one of the things I was going to ask. Like, at some point in the previous movies, was she pregnant? Because it seemed to be quite a surprise to her that it was her daughter. Like, oh, this is your daughter. Yeah. Like, what?
Yeah. No, and they didn't. I mean, she and Michael, I guess she and Michael get together, I guess, but I never thought about I mean, they didn't have any hint toward her being pregnant when she was fighting, trying to save Michael at the beginning of the movie. Okay.
So Wikipedia comment regarding this.
Okay.
When they're talking about Celine, she says she is the lover of Michael Corvin and the mother of Eve, whom she conceived with Michael in the second film.
Okay.
So if we assume that, so they conceive, and then the events that get to the time when they get frozen
pretty
happen
right
maybe a month or two after that, you know, really soon after, before she would show, maybe even know that she's pregnant, then they get her, they cry it out, and they go, oh, she's pregnant. So right. Then they, you know, get
keep part of her unfrozen?
Something like that. I don't know. Or they abstract the embryo and test tube grower or something like that. So that's what it says in Wikipedia, though, so take it with a grain of salt.
Right.
It's never confirmed in the movie, but there's kind of an idea.
Okay. Well, based off of what you guys saw, especially because, remember, in this movie, the vampires have gone underground and they're hiding because they're all being killed. But still, it looks like Lycans are still, they were still underground a little bit, but they're coming back because people are starting to inject themselves with Lycan blood to create super Lycans.
Mm-hmm.
All this kind of stuff. So that didn't make a whole lot of sense to me because Lycans die. You know, I'm like if you're going to be anything, wouldn't you want to be a vampire, live forever? Anyway.
Right.
Thinking about that, but the point of that I'm also trying to raise is based off of these movies and what you know of them, are you more of a Lycan or a vampire guy?
No, I've always been more of a vampire person.
I'm gonna have to agree with that. Maybe because they are more intelligent.
Okay.
Well, for me, it's always been the fact that you can basically live forever if you're a vampire. You know. So, but I will say that I'm much more of an old school vampire person than this underworld. This seems more like this is the post Matrix era.
Everybody has trench coats.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I would think that a vampire would, over the years, update their wardrobe to kind of fit in.
I don't believe that vampires have any need for automatic weaponry, to tell you the honest truth.
Right.
Well, especially when you're fighting Lycans, it would come in handy to have automatic weaponry.
Yeah.
But yes, I think coming back to a point that we said earlier is it comes back to comparison of have you ever seen Crawl?
Yeah.
You know, the big thing about Crawl was that glaive.
Yeah.
Which is used during the entire freaking film.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So my comment is use the glaive. You're a freaking vampire. Use your vampiric powers to do everything. So that's my comment that I forgot to mention earlier today. But use the glaive.
Fair enough. So. Well, and the last thing I was thinking about this movie is, did anybody check out the soundtrack?
I did not.
Okay. I think if you go to Wikipedia, it has a full list of the soundtrack. But I thought about you, Fuzz, particularly.
I was going to say, is Maynard on there?
Let's see. They have – I heard Amy, of course. You heard her in the end, Evanescence. Let's see. They've got I don't know, Flyleaf, Stacey Sturm of Flyleaf, Linkin Park, The Cure, Ministry – Lacuna Coil, Naked and Famous, Black Light Burns, William Control, Civil, Twilight, and Sons, 8mm, Ryan T. Hope of the Lifeline, Collide, Comba Christ, I don't know them at all, and then Justin Lassen featuring Silent Fury. So they've got, quite an interesting, aesthetic. Perfection. I mean, there's a lot. It's a very indie, rocky soundtrack.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that was one of the high points of Underworld for me was the fact that Maynard was on the original soundtrack. So, it wasn't bad. like I said, I was cowering in fear of the soundtrack through a lot of the movie. So,
weren't a huge fan of the score then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they have a whole score album as well. Dang. So, there we go. Mm-hmm.
So, with that, we have learned one thing from Underworld Awakening. When escaping from your enemies, getting your outfit on is way more important than feasting on fresh blood.
How nice of them to keep that outfit so handy for her.
Yeah.
You gotta look good.
Well, they probably just kind of like stashed it away as like, you know, keep all the artifacts of the specimen. So my recommendation on this, it's just another Underworld movie, really. That's a good thing, a bad thing. Take it as it wills. I don't think it's as good as the others, honestly. I think the others were better. I was surprised to see JMS's name on the screen at the end. I think this could have been pretty good, but ended up lacking in something. I'm not exactly sure. Maybe they used the glaive stuff, but there was just something a little bit lacking on it. Go see it. Maybe not in 3D, but you know, go see it if you like the Underworld movies, if you like the action. But I mean, that's all you're really gonna get out of it. It's not gonna be, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would never dissuade. It's hard for me to dissuade anybody from seeing this movie because I know it's very popular. Again, I was sort of hoping that Straczynski was gonna maybe inject some hope into this film for me, but it ended up not being that way, so I was kind of bummed out about that. But if you are going to go see it, especially if you're going to go see it at the Regal Cinema in Chicago, just make sure you bring earplugs with you.
Right. Personally, I didn't think it lived up to the previous movies, but then again, the third one kind of went sour, so I guess this one continued. I was hoping it would be better, but I didn't really care for the whole mystery child and let's shoot ourselves up with werewolf blood kind of stuff. But I actually kind of got really bored with the story itself. But I did like the visuals. You go see these movies for the fight scenes and how the characters look and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But so I liked that. But as far as the storyline and stuff, I just really wasn't into it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, meh, but go see it anyway. Moving on into
like the other ones.
Moving on into the future.
Hi, welcome to the future. And I'm telling you, it's great here.
Paranorman, directed by Chris Butler and Sam Fell. With the voices of Cody McPhee, which we saw in Let Me In, Annie Kendrick, and Christopher Mintz-Plasse. Something like that. Anyways. This is a comedy thriller. A small town goes under siege by the undead. Only a misunderstood local boy, Norman Babcock, who has the ability to speak with the dead, is able to prevent the destruction of his town from a centuries-old curse. He'll also have to take on ghosts, witches, zombies, and the worst of all, the moronic grown-ups. But this young ghoul, Whisper, can find his paranormal abilities pushed to their unworldly limits. Okay, I made that more dramatic than it really is.
But it was a good read.
But here's the thing is,
it sounded good.
I've seen two trailers for this, and two different ones. They're basically the same. But I saw the regular teaser trailer, and then I also saw one which was tagged MSN exclusive. There's the general teaser one, which just has that, I think the song is called Season of the Witch soundtrack
playing. Season of the Witch by Donovan.
Yeah. And it just has music in the background, essentially, or just visuals in the background. Just that one solid track. The only time you actually hear anything from the movie is when Norman's brushing his teeth and goes, which is awesome. Just the visuals they chose to kind of get you interested. You can't hear anything, so you don't really know what's going on. You just have this song, which was perfect pick for that song, that track. It was just perfect. And it just, for some reason, it's like, dude, I totally want to see this. You know, it's like, what is going on? This sounds interesting. This looks cool. I want to see this. And the animation was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell I'm a little excited, by the way?
Just a little. Yeah, a little bit. I just have a question. Like, where did you see this or find out about this, Stephen? Because I've not heard or seen anything about this ever before.
Really? A fun mistake for me.
No, I've seen it in front of a couple of movies.
Huh.
I'd have to go back and think about which ones, but I had seen it in front of a couple of things.
Okay.
That's one place I saw it, and then I've got to admit that I kind of forgot about it, and then I saw it like on the front page of IMDb for the end of the year, that kind of thing, and I was like, oh, okay. You know, yeah. I think I saw it in front of Puss in Boots.
Okay.
I know that for a fact. And probably maybe the Muppets and Arthur okay. Christmas. One of okay. those two.
Yeah, I didn't see it in front of any of those.
I first saw it in front of Film State, was going to try to put it in earlier. Then I found out that Steve had already put it on the list.
Yeah.
So I had to find a replacement.
You were nice enough to do that.
But yeah. By the way, Film State is an awesome show to watch each two times a week because it shows trailers.
Gotcha.
I was just saying. Just want to put that on your list. Anyways.
But all in all, I think it looks like it's a good looking trailer. It definitely harkens back to. I mean, clearly from the makers of Coraline, so you know it definitely has that feel if you like Coraline. Also has a good little visualish reference to Tim Burton.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite his characters, of course, but if you like that style of a Burton film, you know, hopefully you would like this. I clearly like the topics, you know, that it's being talked about and stuff. I'm surprised they're not going to go for a Halloween release on this.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit. Especially because you don't find too many like family-friendly Halloween movies. All that,
right? Often. That's true.
Have you guys seen the second one?
No, not yet. I haven't.
Okay, because that actually gives out more information about it. It actually talks about what's going on in the movie.
Okay. I thought the explanation gave a lot, but I haven't seen the second one. You found?
Yeah.
Sorry.
I really like. I think that the initial teaser that they put out was perfect in every single way. I mean, this is the type of they knew how to sell this picture just from a teaser. Because I would tell you, just seeing that, I'd be like, I'm in the theaters right now. You don't need to show me. Don't have to tell me anything else. Don't have to really tell me what the plot is. I'm there. And it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that it was the creators of Coraline, same type of animation. It was, the movie spoke for itself without having to actually hear anything from the movie.
Mm.
So that's my critical review about the teaser, the initial teaser.
Right.
Fair enough.
I mean, it's kind of interesting as you talk about like Tim Burton, because the whole sort of Nightmare Before Christmas, Corpse Bride, Coraline, this film, this is sort of, you know, the people that worked on, not everybody, but some of the people that worked on this, obviously they worked on Coraline, and some of those people, you know, worked on Corpse Bride, and some of those people worked on A Nightmare Before Christmas. So it's a very sort of, you know, incestual group of people that have all sort of worked with each other at some point in time on this type of project. So these people that are involved with this really, really love sort of this form, this form of sort of animation or this style of character, you know. So they all there's that sort of that common theme running through all of these films. So they're not, you know, it's not when I say, you know, when they says from the creators of Coraline, like the guy who's directing this movie was, he did the storyboards for Coraline, I believe. And I think there's a couple other production people that are from that, but you know, it's not like the guy who wrote Coraline wrote this and the guy who wrote.
Oh, right. But you can see that. You mean, like, you can definitely tell that they were worked on the movie.
Yes, yes.
But yeah. From the visuals, yeah.
And Coraline is an awesome film. I don't know if you guys have seen it.
I haven't seen it in a while. I enjoyed it, but I've got to see it again.
Yeah, and it's supposedly, and I'm gonna buy it because supposedly it's one of the best 3D Blu-rays available.
Oh.
At some point I will pick up Coraline. I'll probably throw it on the list when I pick it up. But yeah, that basically, I mean, it had me at, you know, when it said, you know, that there's people, you know, directly from Coraline are involved with this. I was like, okay, I'll see it. So, you know, it had me there. I mean, but yes, the trailer was awesome. I thought it was really well done, especially using the Donovan song, which is kind of weird because it seems like there's a really big push these days to include old sort of psychedelic and rock music in trailers recently. Like, I keep seeing a lot of like classic rock and stuff in you know, in movie trailers. So,
and not just in Rock of Ages.
Right. Yeah. No. You know, John Carter comes to mind.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I definitely on board for this one. I think if somebody were to throw it up on the list.
Just kidding. Throw it up. If we were to vomit it onto the list.
All right. So where were we? Excitement. As I said, wow, what a teaser. Track use was perfect and the visuals were executed perfectly. Not telling you much about what it's about, but intriguing you to want to find out more. The second trailer gives a little more, but not too much. Definitely want to see this in 3D.
Yeah, what he said. and the trailer had me at from the creators of Coraline, really. So
there you go. Totally enjoy the trailer. Totally looks like a kind of movie. So, just got to go and have a good time.
Excellent. And with that, that is the end of the 90th reel of Seawell Movies. Next week, we're going to have the coming attractions are The Broken Hearts Club, a romantic comedy, Man on a Ledge, and Jack the Giant Killer. There's plenty of ways to contact us. Let us know what you think about these movies. Go into COLmovies.com, leave a comment on the blog, or you can email us at COLmovies@gmail.com. Also, please give us a call. We'd like to hear your voice on this show. Leave a voicemail at 361-265-8255. That's 361-COL-TALK. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/COLmovies or Facebook at facebook.com/COLmovies. Please pop into iTunes. Leave us a review, preferably 5 stars, please. And we will read it on the show. Whatever you write. Anything you write. Whatever. Just say. With that, any final thoughts?
Hopefully the news gets better.
Well, I think once we get past Super Bowl and Oscar season, the news will be less focused on those two items, hopefully.
Mm. Yep.
So that... I think that's it. So with that, for me, for Fuzz, for Steven. Take care, everyone.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, dude.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. I just stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
And
Bloodline.